The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.
You're about to listen to a KCIW First. I'm Candace Michelle, KCIW's program director, and I'd like to welcome you to the very first broadcast of a brand new KCIW program. This is KCIW Investigates, and today's show focuses on the controversy going on at the Port of Brookings Harbor. What with the firings and recall petitions, there's a big story here. You've already heard KCIW's in-depth interviews with former port commissioners, employees, and managers. Well, now KCIW Investigates can offer more context for that content, and maybe even clear up some of the confusion. What is the real story at the port? Our investigative team has spent months attending port meetings, digging through documentation and port resolutions, and talking to dozens of citizens and stakeholders. It's a complicated story. Listen up as KCIW investigative reporter Nigel Weiss takes you through exactly what happened at the port, when, and why.
The Port of Brookings Harbor is looking for a new port manager. At a meeting in March, the Port Commission voted to fire the existing manager, Gary Dillinger. Prior to the firing, Dillinger had already been fired once, then rehired and put on administrative leave, all in the space of a week in early January this year, in a series of actions that have generated significant controversy in the community. Commissioner Roy Davis voted against firing Dillinger in March.
The motion is to fire Gary.
That's what the motion is on the table.
My answer is no.
Treasurer Thompson.
Yes.
Vice President Barbas.
Yes.
President Christian.
Yes. Meeting adjourned.
Recall.
Port employee Skylar Windham said he was surprised by the firing.
When this happened with Gary's contract, I didn't know that something egregious didn't happen, and I expected that it did for, you know, something so severe to take place. So we sort of held out and we kept going to work, and that's, I think, why a lot of us didn't just walk initially. I think if we knew the reason that morning, they'd probably still be looking for people to work at the port.
After the firing, many expressed frustration with the board. I spoke with Barbara Chiamella, owner of the Brookings Harbor Visitor and Tour Center, and a member of the port's budget committee after a recent port meeting.
We elect commissioners to speak on behalf of the public.
Yeah.
And not one thing they're saying is
one-sided
speaking
completely, except one person up there.
Exactly. And that's the part. It's not the people. It's the fact that they were put in that position to speak for all of us, and they are not doing their job. It's not who they are or what they are. It's the fact they're not doing their job, and they want to pick Gary apart.
The port and its board of commissioners are now facing a lawsuit claiming that the firing violated state laws that govern public meetings. And there is a campaign going to recall the four commissioners who initially voted for the firing. There's a lot going on here, so let's start by going through a timeline of events. Back in December of last year, the Board of Commissioners for the Port of Brookings Harbor called for a criminal investigation into a 2016 construction contract approved by a previous board. Here's Commissioner Jan Barbas speaking with Commissioner Roger Thompson and the rest of the Port Commission on December 27th.
I would suggest that we have the sheriff and the DA refer it to the Oregon Department of Justice for investigation. They're the experts, and they should look at this situation.
That the contract to Dave Hoover is illegal, the meeting was illegal, or expenditures funds was illegal.
I think those are possibilities.
The deal had been signed using emergency contract rules under state law, which allow a public contract to be executed without the normally required bidding process. Some of the records related to the contract were found to be missing from the files in the port office, according to Commissioner Jan Barbas, and he and other commissioners suspected possible criminal activity.
I think the whole bidding on that whole damn dock is all phony, and it was done without board permission. The contract, I never knew Dave Hoover, never heard of his name until somebody told me out there when they were building the damn thing, putting the screw things in. And how in the heck we got $1.5 million and didn't go out for bid.
Where I'm at, I would rather see the newspaper headline, port request investigation, than the newspaper headline, port being investigated.
Absolutely.
And I really enjoy working with Roy, and we agree on most everything. And I'm hopeful that this turns out to be some kind of nothing. But I feel that the public interest, we've expended $1.6 million of public funds. We've done it on a no-bid basis. We can't establish that we actually made this emergency declaration and award. And I feel that this needs to be looked at.
The commission directed Dellinger and port staff to prepare documents related to the contract so they could be sent to county authorities. 2 weeks later, on January 5th, the commission summoned Dellinger to a closed-door session of a port meeting and asked him to resign. When he refused, they voted to fire him. At his due process hearing in March, Dellinger said he had no idea before that meeting in January that his job was under question.
On January 5th, 2018, I was abruptly asked to resign by the port commission. When I did not resign, I was fired for no cause. Afterwards, the firing was rescinded, and I was placed on administrative leave. All of this came as a major surprise to me. I did not know the commission even had concerns about my actions or performance. I was not told about those concerns on January 5th. In fact, I did not learn of those concerns until the commission's attorney, Mr. Coffey, sent a letter to my attorney on January 26th.
The only no vote was Commissioner Roy Davis, who maintains that he also had no idea of the impending firing, and who has since then been critical both of the decisions to fire Dellinger and to investigate the 2016 emergency contract by the rest of the commission. A few days later, on January 9th, the commission convened again to rehire Dellinger and instead put him on paid administrative leave. There has been some confusion among community members about why Dellinger was fired in the first place, because the reasons weren't initially public. In March, the commission held a due process hearing for Dellinger, as required by law, for him to defend himself. This was the first time the rest of us in the public heard any of the reasons for the firing. The main substance of it was that Dellinger had not cooperated fully in the view of several commissioners in the push for the investigation into the 2016 emergency contract called for by the commission. And several commissioners expressed a more general mistrust towards Dellinger, though what they meant exactly wasn't always clear.
When a commissioner made a suggestion to him or something, most of them he wouldn't take. He was a control freak to me, to his people in the office.
Commissioners Roger Thompson and Roy Davis squared off before former port manager Gary Dellinger's firing in March.
I've managed a lot of plants, and I have been around. And I don't trust him at all. He's not been very forthcoming with the commission in a lot of ways when he made any kind of suggestion to him. It wasn't his idea. That's nobody's idea. And that's not how we should work as a group, team.
There's no team here, Roger.
That's right.
Thompson was found by the Oregon Government Ethics Commission to have violated conflict of interest laws earlier this year when he tried to use his position on the Port Commission to purchase real estate owned by the port at below market rates. In mid-February, Kathy Lindley Hall, a former port commissioner, was tapped for the post of interim manager until a replacement is hired, but the port has been without a permanent manager since early January. According to documents obtained through a public records request, the firing had cost the port more than $60,000 at the end of February, and since that doesn't include legal fees from March or Dellinger's severance pay, we can expect costs to the port to increase. What has struck many as strange about Dellinger's firing is that it emerges from an investigation that has problems with it at the very least. and that, in fact, may not even be happening. The one into that emergency construction contract from back in 2016. The contract was for work to replace an old dock attached to a seafood processing plant, which is now occupied by BC Fisheries. The plant hadn't opened yet when the port submitted a request for emergency funds to rebuild the attached dock, but construction at the plant had already begun.
The port agreed to provide them with a dock.
Doug Lewis is a manufacturing consultant who worked with the port for several years.
Fisheries could have sued the port for every day they were unable to operate due to that dock not functioning.
If you get a project like a dock, you send the bids out, and it's about, after the bids are all sent out, it's about 6 months before you see construction starting. Well, they didn't have 6 months. BC Fisheries was ready to open, and the port, under the agreement, was providing the dock.
Ted Fitzgerald, who managed the port between 2011 and 2016, explained that the commission at the time had the choice to either sell the dock to BC Fisheries or to repair it themselves. The port took the option of repairing the dock so it could be leased to the company and generate revenue.
Since the port has historically been underfunded, it was in the port's interest to look to maximize any revenue opportunities that it could have.
A bill passed by the Oregon State Legislature that year in July of 2015 had allotted $1.5 million to the Port of Brookings Harbor, setting it aside specifically for dock repairs. But the money wouldn't be available until after their deadline, when BC Fisheries was slated to open. So the port secured a loan from the State Infrastructure Finance Authority in November. But by then, there were less than 6 months to have a brand new dock ready. Again, former port manager Ted Fitzgerald.
The contractor, Dave Hoover Construction, that had been hired by BC Fisheries was competent to do that work. And in fact, he was planning on doing the work for BC Fisheries, but then the port intervened, and it would have been, in my opinion and in the opinion of others, would have been unworkable and not really feasible to try to insert a different contractor in there based on the tight confines of where all this work had to be done, and coupled with the fact that everything needed to be up and running by April 1st, which is the beginning of crab season in 2016. We determined that for those reasons, it was an emergency project, and we would be working with the contractor who was already on site because that was the most value for the situation. And in fact, I don't believe there was another workable way to get the project completed within the time frame allotted.
Emergency procedures don't require the full Board of Commissioners to be convened, and the resolution authorizing the contract shows the signatures of Fitzgerald and then Board President Roy Davis. For weeks in January, after Dellinger was fired, the commission discussed alleged problems with the new dock.
The engineer came down. They didn't want to hear what he had to say, so I wound up drilling holes to prove that I was right.
That's Dave Hoover, owner of the construction company that built both the dock and the BC Fisheries plant the dock is attached to.
Every time they accused me of something, I had to drill holes and do whatever to prove that they're right. And the engineer was, I mean, he's still pissed because it's like, the engineer owns that. I mean, it's the same engineer who does the inspections designed the damn thing. And he's like, no, there's no problem.
The commission had the structural engineer who worked on the dock, Dave Gowers, return with Hoover to test the thickness of the concrete.
You've got the design engineer. There's no problem. We've got more shrinkage than we thought, and this is all correctable. I had people come over that do ODOT and Caltrans. Nope, this is perfectly normal. We know how to fix it. We have the technology. And, you know, they just overlooked everything. We're going to make something out of nothing.
Doug Lewis, the manufacturing consultant, assessed the condition of the dock on his own, and Lewis said he couldn't find any problems with the dock either.
When I heard there was some questionable work done on the dock, I was shocked. I went down there and looked at it. I couldn't see any issues. One of the commissioners mentioned that the dock wasn't the thickness it was supposed to be. So I looked at the plans, and I'm looking, okay, this is poured on pan deck. And so then it finally occurred to me, Pandeck is a corrugated material. So when you say something is going to be done in 8-inch Pandeck, that means the bottom web is going to be 8 inches, but the upper webs are quite a bit less. And so somebody thought that the dock wasn't poured thick enough. And so I went and looked at it. I took my sonic tester, and I believe it was an inch over specification on an average. It was an inch thicker than it was supposed to be. Somebody had calculated the amount of cement it would take to make an 8-inch slab, and the amount of cement they bought came up short. Well, it's 8-inch Pandeck, which is not the same as pouring an 8-inch solid slab. It takes less cement, and that's the whole idea. It's lighter for the same strength as an 8-inch slab, and that's all part of the engineering. So because somebody didn't understand the engineering issue, they were trying to make this case. Basically, it looks like they were trying to build a case that something crooked or not above board took place. Then the other rumor I heard was there were cracks. So I examined the cracks. They're expansion joints. Concrete shrinks. You have to have expansion joints. And this is where they're specifically allowed to crack. And these were absolutely and perfectly cracking along the beams, which it's supposed to do.
The test showed that the concrete had been poured to the correct specifications, and the commission was eventually satisfied. Commissioner Barbas acknowledged that at a meeting in January.
Three cores taken that have shown that the dock is of adequate thickness. At this time, I don't think there's any evidence to say that there's anything wrong with that dock.
The commission hasn't brought up any further questions about the dock publicly since the beginning of the year, and we don't know the status of the investigation into it or the emergency contract. Again, Doug Lewis.
Say they did find a technicality in the emergency law that didn't quite fit. Hey, what would they have proved? First of all, we've got the dock. It's all sound, even though they tried to make it unsound. That didn't work. It's perfectly sound. There's nothing wrong with it. So that became a non-issue. So now we've got the cost of it. Well, the cost is well below the estimate. And it's not uncommon for estimates to start right about at the estimate and go up from there. And so we would have to establish that they were grossly overcharged, but that's obviously not the case. So what would the port have really gained from any of this?
Curry County District Attorney Everett Dial couldn't confirm that an investigation into the contract is underway. Dial said he sent port documents to the Department of Justice, but they were ones he'd received months before the commission had first called for the investigation on December 27th.
You know, I know Gary Dillinger got fired, but before all that started, Roger Thompson had provided me with some paperwork on that, brought me a big bundle of documents. And I did forward that off to DOJ for them to review, and I have not heard back from them.
Dial said that after he was contacted by the commission to launch the investigation into the dock, he'd held on to the documents he'd been given by Commissioner Roger Thompson because he wasn't sure what they were, only sending them later in February when he heard nothing else from the port.
Jan Barbas had approached me and said, there's something going on at the port you really need to examine. And I said, well, send the documents up to me. They never did. And the documents that I had received from Roger Thompson, I'd gotten months before. And so when all this started, I thought, well, maybe I better take those documents that Roger gave me and send them up to DOJ just in case, so that doesn't, you know, so they can review it. I don't even know if it's the same thing. I assume it is, but I don't know that for sure because I've never been contacted by anyone from the port on that.
It's not clear what Dial actually sent to the Department of Justice, but it couldn't have been the packet that the commission had port staff put together in December for him and Sheriff John Ward to look at.
So Ward, I think, had written them back and said, we need the documentation before we can do anything. And I wrote Jan back and I saw John Ward's response to you and agree we need to get documentation. Additionally, we're going to need some sort of summary as what the criminal activity is believed to be. And if they sent it to me, I would have expected a follow-up call, and I've never gotten that. And so I don't think I've ever gotten it.
Port staff told me they believed the packet had been sent, but could not confirm who sent it or when. The port's attorney at the time of the firing, Jim Coffey, couldn't confirm whether the packet had been reviewed or sent, and referred me to their current attorney, Martha Rice. Rice couldn't be reached for comment. So, to recap, the dock attached to the BC Fisheries facility is in good working condition, according to the design engineer, the construction contractor, and it appears the Port Commission itself. Also, the evidence so far is that the procedures for signing and executing an emergency contract were all fulfilled without any problems. And finally, the district attorney doesn't seem to have gotten, maybe wasn't actually sent, the documents for an investigation into the dock. I reached out to the four commissioners to clarify why they had terminated Dellinger as port manager, but none agreed to comment for this story. By law, the Port Commission is not actually required to provide any reasons for firing a public employee. But many feel that Dellinger was treated unfairly by the commission, and there's now a campaign to recall four of the commissioners. Commissioners Andy Martin, Angie Christian, Roger Thompson, and Jan Barbas.
So the recall, I started it because I felt that as a staff member of the port, we really had no other recourse. I had talked to people of the state, people at the Department of Justice, and they're all kind of like, well, the board, the Board of Commissioners is almost untouchable. I mean, they govern the port district. And so, like I said, really our only recourse is the recall.
That's Skylar Windham. Windham was an employee at the port office at the time of Dellinger's firing. He says he felt demoralized after what he considers the inappropriate conduct of the commission in terminating the manager and decided to start a recall.
The whole community was really just angry and mad about Gary's termination. They didn't understand why, because the commissioners didn't give a reason. And everyone wanted to know why, and they were very upset, including staff. And not only was it Gary's termination, but it was just the total disregard for the staff and for port morale by the commission. You know, the commission has proven themselves enough, and the community's upset for good reason, and they need to be gone. They need to be gone.
Windham described hearing that Commissioner Barbas had questioned some of his work to another commissioner, and he said that was the last straw.
I had one commissioner come to me and other coworkers saying that Jan Barbas had asked them if they thought I was undermining the port projects, the getting a grants to do the boarding ramp to the Marine Board. I was so offended by that because that was really the only reason that I had stayed. When I found out Gary was terminated and I didn't trust the commission, the only thing that kept me from walking out was the fact that I was in the middle of these grants with the Marine Board that pretty much in the office, I was the only one that was familiar with the paperwork and where we were, what stage, where the deadlines were. And I wanted to see it through. So when I heard that the commissioners asked, you know, if I was undermining these projects, I was really offended and I felt like, you know, what am I doing here? If they would rather me not be here and they want to deal with it themselves, then so be it. So that's when I took a leave of absence.
Commissioner Roy Davis, the only port commissioner who is not named in the lawsuit filed by Dellinger, declined to comment for the story. But Davis has frequently questioned the actions of the other commissioners in port meetings since the firing, and is a supporter of the recall, according to the Curry Coastal Pilot. The recall has been subject to ongoing debate on local social media. Some have argued that since there is a lawsuit seeking to resolve whether or not the commissioners violated the law in firing Dellinger, then there is no need to preempt that process by continuing forward with the recall. If the county certifies the petition for the recall, which was due on April 16th, then there will be an election later in the year to decide if any of the commissioners will be ultimately removed from office. Regardless of the outcome of the recall campaign, the lawsuit against the port and four of the commissioners will continue in the background for some time. In his complaint, Dellinger says that part of the commission met secretly and on multiple occasions to discuss his employment, and then tried to fire him without giving him an opportunity to defend his job first in an open hearing, according to Dellinger's attorney, Lauren Collins.
We asked to have the decisions where the commission met initially to terminate him and did not give him an opportunity for an open hearing. We asked to have that declared void, and we also believe that there were some violations of the open meetings law with regard to subcommittee meetings and that sort of thing. So he's asking to have some decisions of the board declared void and to have the court declare that the public meetings law was violated, and he's seeking some of his attorney fees. At this point, the complaint is still filed, and he's still asking for his job back.
According to state law, all public meetings, including subcommittee meetings, are required to have advance public notice, and minutes of those meetings have to be made available. While the court decides whether Dellinger's firing was legal, the port will go on without a permanent manager for the foreseeable future, at the same time that support for Dellinger remains strong.
You gotta remember, this port was in serious trouble. And Gary was not solving all the problems, but he had the problems no longer snowballed and out of control.
That's the one that killed everybody. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, Gary stepped up and actually started doing things, and damn it, next thing you know, he got a raise and then he got fired.
To this day and this moment, I can tell you, without a doubt, that each staff member still supports Gary Dellinger, and they still want him back, and so do the port tenants and port businesses. We're still infuriated by four commissioners who continue to make bad decisions and show themselves in bad lights.
That was Doug Lewis, the manufacturing consultant, Brett Esther, who manages Bandon Pacific, a seafood processor at the port, and Skylar Windham, a former port staff member. As for the fate of the current commission, we can expect to find out in May whether a recall will go forward. And the port may be looking for more commissioners as well as a new manager. For KCIW Investigates, this is Nigel Weiss reporting.
This story continues to evolve. Nigel reports that enough signatures have been collected to move forward with the recall efforts, and the petitions have been filed with the county. Port Commissioners Roger Thompson and Andy Martin have both resigned. And defendant Jan Barbas has filed his response to the lawsuit being brought by former port manager Gary Dellinger. The KCIW News and Investigation team will continue to follow this story and will keep you updated on this important issue.